Welcome to Beach Books and Beyond with me, Monique Chambers. Each week, I invite a different guest from a different walk of life to talk to me about books that they've read, which have influenced them, and books they suggest we take to the beach this summer. You've no excuse not to be well read. Welcome to Beach Books and Beyond with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is Monique Bayer. It's going to be strange talking to another Monique, I have to tell you.
Yes, it is, Monique. We're going to have fun with that.
We're going to have fun with that. So you're in Malta, all the way from Melbourne.
I am, Melbourne, Australia. That's right.
That's a long flight. You can read a lot of books on that flight.
I did. I read some books. I watched some movies. Mm-hmm. You know, all those things kind of go together. But the books that I'd like to talk about with you today are not books that I've read on planes. They are books that I've read recently, though.
Okay.
And I've chosen these two because I think they fit into the same kind of trend we're seeing, not just in Australia, not just in Malta, but around the world, around wellness, physical wellness, but also mental wellness or unwellness, as the case may be.
Is that a bit deep, or are they books that actually you can enjoy, you get something out of,
Absolutely.
Even if you're not going through anything particularly?
Oh, they're not self-help books.
Okay.
Yeah. One might be. But I found them both to be incredibly enjoyable to read as well.
Okay. Well, uplifting, motivating, that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So tell us a bit about the books. What are the books? Who are they written by?
So the first one is probably the deeper of the two, written by an author named Sarah Wilson. And Sarah's had an interesting story because she started off her profile as the editor of a fashion magazine, editor of Australian Cosmopolitan.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And then she realised that wasn't her calling.
Okay.
Not fulfilling, that sort of thing. And she actively wanted to do something else. And so then she became pretty well known for releasing a book and a website and a program around what she thought really changed her life, which was completely eliminating sugar from her diet. And that program was called I Quit Sugar.
Okay.
Yeah. And she became quite wealthy and has a very large following because of that.
Hmm.
Multiple cookbooks, tens of thousands of people have gone through the online course, massive Instagram following, all that stuff. So she says that giving up sugar kind of cured slowly, but surely, but cured her autoimmune diseases. Wow. And that's why she took that up and then started to advocate for that in others as well. But curiously, her life took another turn. And then she saw that the reasons behind her autoimmune were actually more deep-rooted than that, and revealed that she'd been suffering for her whole life, or her whole adult life, from anxiety.
And so maybe she was having the sugar to, because you're anxious and you're, you know, using all your energy. And
it's all possible.
So quitting the sugar quits the sugar, but doesn't affect the cause.
So her next book, she decided to take a big detour away from glossy cookbooks and write a book with no pictures at all. This is the book I want to talk about, called First We Make the Beast Beautiful. And it's about her battle with anxiety.
Okay.
So it's a very honest description of the way that she feels, but also about her coming to terms with a different approach to looking at anxiety specifically, but mental illness more broadly, which is for people who are very high-functioning in their lives but suffer from this, and there's a lot of stigma around it. So what she decided to do was to say, well, actually there's certain elements of her anxiety that make her, for want of a better term, a better person.
What did she pick up on?
So sometimes her anxiety makes her much more alert.
Okay.
Sometimes it makes her, some people might call it panicky, others might, she goes into states of hyper-productivity. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So she's kind of equated those things together, but I think the book describes it a bit, you know, in deeper terms than that. But so what she's started to say is that, you know, and she's very acutely aware of the present moment when she's anxious as well, which she kind of dives into. So what she's trying to say is, rather than say, I'm going through a bad period. She says, I'm going through an anxious period. And we can learn to live with that in our lives, hence the name of the book.
So not lock yourself in the bathroom and get through the panic attack, it's actually utilise it.
So. She's definitely done that and talks about it, but now what she tries to do is utilise it a bit more. If you follow her on social media, quite recently she put up a post that said, I'm in the US doing the book tour, launching the book here. I haven't slept for 3 days. I'm in the middle of a panic attack, but I've got to go on breakfast television right now. Yeah. She said she's using the adrenaline from her lack of sleep for 3 days to get through it, and she was proud of herself for doing it. Mm. So an example of, you know, saying, well, I'm living with this thing. How do I negotiate life being anxious and making it a feature rather than trying to hide it away?
I have to say, I suffer from panic attacks, and when I have them, I wake up in the morning and my dressing room is absolutely tidy. It's wonderful in that sense. So without having read the book, I've sort of benefited a bit because I get up in the middle of the night and I need to do something. So I get up and actually, you know, friends say, go for a walk, do this. No, I get up and I tidy my room and, it, you know, I wake up and it's like, look at that. Like got the series have been.
Got a lot of energy. Yeah. And in fact, just this morning, I was just scrolling through the Instagram and she had posted that book now is a number one bestseller in the US.
Fantastic.
So I think it's resonated with a lot of people.
So how is it written, though? Is it
first-person narrative.
Okay.
She's talking about her experience.
Uh-huh. And then does she give tips on how to turn a situation around?
Yeah. It's actually annotated in the side.
Mm.
Yeah, so in the side, in the margins, she's got certain tips and that sort of thing.
Oh, fantastic.
And it's set around a set of, the structure of the book is set around tips, types of anxieties, that sort of thing.
And how to do it, and the different scenarios, different situations, where you are, who you're with, that kind of thing.
But if in any way, like, I wanted to read it because I don't just suffer from anxiety, but I have friends that do.
Mm.
So I wanted to try and get some sort of idea about what people go through.
Yeah.
And it's pretty honest.
Mm.
Yeah.
And when you read it, do you now understand? Is it something that you read in small chunks and thought, oh, my life? Or is it something you just, once you started reading it, that's it, you can put it down?
I was the latter.
Okay.
I read it pretty quickly.
Okay.
And also my mom, I passed it on to her and she read it pretty quickly too.
Okay. How thick is it? Is it a couple of inches? Is it?
It's probably about 250, 300 pages.
Okay.
So it's totally doable. It looks like a normal novel.
Uh-huh.
It's actually got quite a beautiful cover, the Australian edition. I don't know if everyone's doing the same edition, but got kind of an octopus.
Hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah. And you said you were going to talk to us about another book.
Mm. Still on that subject of kind of looking after yourself.
That's a nice way of putting it, actually.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. So I kind of see this whole wellness trend, craze, whatever you want to call it, the way it's going is not necessarily about which vegetables to put in your green juice.
Mm.
It's much more holistic. It's about how we take care of ourselves in lots of different ways. So that's your mental health, your physical health, your.
And sometimes just giving yourself a break.
Giving yourself a break.
Mm.
Taking care of yourself. Yep. The second book is a new book. The other one's 2017, this one's 2018. And it's written by a journalist who's very well respected. She's worked as an investigative journalist and a travel writer as well and all those kinds of things for many publications you'd know, The Guardian, CNN,
okay.
BBC.
Uh-huh. So well respected.
Well respected. And she realised that over the course of her career she's been sent on many different travel or lifestyle experiences to experience and write up as part of a feature.
Okay.
Article.
Like spas.
Exactly. Spas, the latest crazy health treatment, all that kind of thing. So she had a collection of these stories, but rather than just put them together like a travel blog, she decided to kind of create some narrative out of it. And the book is called Wellmania, right?
Okay.
So it's in three sections. One is about diet, one is about yoga, one is about spirituality.
Okay.
Right? So meditation, essentially, when we talk about the spirituality. So diet, yoga, meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's in that order for a reason because the first experience she details is quite crazy and it does get you kind of hooked in terms of what's going to happen next. She goes on an experience with Chinese medicine, Eastern medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts off with a 101-day fast. So she eats nothing, literally nothing but water, for the first 21 days.
Okay.
And then after that, she's allowed to introduce things like a single boiled egg, half a cucumber. And she documents for you. She does it.
Yeah.
And the only thing she you have to rock up at this particular doctor who administers it. You have to rock up, I think it's twice a day, to his practice to get your herbs.
Okay.
And your massage, especially in the first 3 weeks when you're going through the fast. Mm-hmm. So there's something to it. And they kind of also counsel you through not having eaten for 3 weeks.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. So she documents, like, what happens with her body, how she feels emotionally, physically, whatever else, you know. So you start off with that. But she talks all through time. So some of the stuff she says, I did this 20 years ago. Some of it she did last week. And how it all relates to not just her first person experience, but how, why these things exist, why we've got a society structured in a way, or the values that society has that allow these kinds of services to exist. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So
does it make you question the industry? Does it make you want to do a 101-day fast? Does it make you, or do you think, yeah, no, you come out to the end of it and you think, no, I'll just carry on with my...
Yeah, well, her nice message life at the end of it was that she did it and she felt fantastic and people were commenting on how youthful and thin she looked. And within a couple of months, she was back to square one.
Ah, I see.
Yeah. So all the weight had gone back on and she had the bags under her eyes again and whatever else, because she said it's a way of life that you live. You know, you have to keep it that way. And the moral of the food part of the story is roller coasters don't work, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then the yoga, she talks about hot yoga, and she doesn't just talk about the physical sensation of doing yoga, she talks about the industry behind it, and she talks about the retreat she's been on in India and meeting the yogis, and are they legit, and, you know, like a little bit about how yoga's been industrialized, or commercialized,
huge,
should I say.
Here in Malta, you see people on the beach, you see people on these SUP boards, and everywhere, there's yoga everywhere.
Yeah, and then obviously the last chapter's a bit deeper. If you put the last chapter first, you probably wouldn't make it through, but then you like her style, so you continue, and that's about meditation. And she does everything from going to quite Christian retreats, where it's very much about prayer, all the way through to much more new age esoteric stuff as well, that's less traditional, that's much more about mindfulness and all that kind of stuff.
And again, does that sort of, you said this bit's a bit more heavy, is this the most tempting part of the book that you actually wanted to try, or
I think different people will take different things from it, but I was most, I liked the chapter about diet, just about physically what happened to her and then critiquing the diet industry and all that kind of thing. I'm not a yoga person, so I liked hearing about, you know, what I actually didn't know the difference between all the different yogas, but now I do, and what hot yoga actually was,
and all of that stuff.
So, but I thought it was really interesting because she's funny, and you get a first-person account, but she's also analytical. Yeah, quite enjoyed that one too.
And so that one's just been released?
Yeah, 2018. It got published. So the stories are not all from this year, but the writing is.
So when do you find time to read? Do you sort of wake up and read, or do you go to bed and read? When's your book time?
That's a really good question. I'm an afternoon reader. Sometimes I find myself having finished my work for the day. I know not everybody's in that position of luxury. People are often quite busy. And before my evening activities begin, I find myself sometimes about 4 o'clock or so.
With cup a little of tea bit of, and a book, or yeah, glass cup of wine and a book, whatever.
Cup of tea and a book.
Yeah?
Exactly.
Oh, fantastic. So outside of these sorts of books, what other types of books do you read? Do you read novels or biographies? Or?
I do. Depends on what lands on just what passes past me. I haven't read a novel in a while, to tell you the truth. I'm really interested in these kinds of books that have an element of storytelling to them but are also non-fiction.
Yeah, a bit more factual. And
yeah. Yeah, so I have to admit that if you sit me down and ask me to just read about a certain period of history, you kind of lose me after the first page. But if there's something, you know, in there that's a theme that I'm interested in, I do like kind of a little bit of fact, a little bit of storytelling in there, a little bit of first-person perspective as well.
And you're big into food.
Yeah, that's kind of, yeah, I am.
So you're, do you because these cookbooks now, the way they've been written, they're more stories with the recipe rather than...
It's true.
So do you read other food-related books as well, or just for your
yeah,
work?
Yeah, so the food-related books that I tend to read tend to not be very pictorial,
mm-hmm.
so much more about travel and storytelling.
Okay.
And about where food comes from and stories behind food and all that sort of thing, rather than here's the story, now let's cook something.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't quite like those two sometimes, but you know, there are lots of great books out there around how people interact with food. In fact, the book I'm reading at the moment is a good example of that. It really piqued my interest. In fact, it's by an American author. Her name's Laura Shapiro.
Mm-hmm.
And what she's basically written is six short stories. About each short story is basically a little bit of a biography of one woman in history and her life and how food relates to it.
Okay.
Only one of them is a chef.
Ah.
All others relate to food in a different way, and it's not always positive. So to give you a quirky example, one of the women who is profiled is Eva Braun, Hitler's mistress.
Ooh, okay.
And you do not finish the story with a good opinion of the woman. But
I probably didn't start the story with a good opinion. To be fair.
But interesting to kind of read the story of someone who I didn't know much about and make a whole lot of assumptions about. But she tells the story through what she ate, what she didn't eat, what she prepared,
okay. How
she defined her relationships through food, that sort of thing. So it starts off very, very early on, and it's kind of chronological, and the last person is a 21st century or 20th century figure as well. But we start off very early in history, and then you kind of move forward.
Mm.
So six very different periods of time. But, yeah, women... The story of, you know, kind of ticked all my boxes, a little bit about women, a bit of storytelling, and a little bit about food and travel and
what's
that sort of thing as well.
What's the book called itself?
Called What She Ate.
Okay.
I think that's a new book too.
Do you normally read sort of international or Australian authors or...
Doesn't matter. I don't really care where they come from.
Yeah. So you don't have
I do love to, if there's something interesting that's Australian, I do love to support that. And I just like it because it's good to see... great stuff being created by your own little culture in the corner of the world there. Yeah, I like Australian cinema, I like Australian music, you know, writing as well is a good thing. And, you know, you understand the voice.
Yeah,
like, you relate to it, it's very relatable. But equally so, I read lots of other writing in English.
Okay. Do you read anything Japanese? Because lots of Japanese books are making it across to Malta, for example. I'm just wondering if being so close and... You know, lots of Australians end up there. No, it hasn't sort of...
I don't read,
there.
No.
Not in Japanese, it's sort of translated books.
I can't say that I've ever read anything in Japanese.
And what about you do a lot of travelling as well?
Mm.
Have any of these travel and food books actually motivated you to take a trip somewhere? Have any of them been responsible for a journey you've taken that you recommend to other people too, if you want to get out of your comfort zone, if you wanted to find out more about a particular food or a particular country? Are there any of those books that...
What I do is that when I have a trip planned, if there is a book that relates to that place,
mm-hmm.
I'll try and read it while I'm there, and it really...
Makes a difference. Yeah.
Like, I'm more interested in a particular book if I'm reading about it in the context when I'm there.
Okay.
Yeah, God, I'd love to be able to give you a proper example of that. I've done it a lot of times.
So where have you travelled to recently? You went to Sri Lanka?
Earlier this year I was in Sri Lanka.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So,
did you have a book related to that, or you just went along with it?
I know I read something in Sri Lanka, and I cannot remember. It mustn't have been that great.
There you go. Do you keep your books once you've read them, or do you throw them away?
Depends if I've borrowed them from the library or from a friend, or if I've purchased
them.
You're
the first person who's mentioned using library.
Really?
Yeah.
I love libraries. Libraries are fantastic resources.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've got some great libraries in the city of Melbourne. One in particular I like to use called literally the City Library.
Mm-hmm.
We've got one particular library that's reference only, amazing architecture. If you ever visit Melbourne, it's a fantastic place to visit if you like, looking at old Gold Rush architecture. But the City Library is a very modern building. It's nondescript, but it is open to anyone who wants to borrow.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
so you often go then to...
Often the really popular books have a line,
mm.
so quite often lots of reserves on
uh-huh.
them. Yeah, if you're patient, and there's, you know, lots of things to discover there as well.
Yeah, because that's the beauty, I think, of bookshops and libraries, is actually you go looking for one thing, but you stumble across the something else. It's not like buying online. You kind of, you buy what you go for. And even though they try and recommend other stuff to you, it's, nah.
Also, my place is quite small, and so storage, if you're an avid or a voracious reader, like, storage becomes an issue.
Mm.
Before the days of online streaming, when you physically had to go and buy your DVDs, like, movie people had the same issue.
Issues, uh-huh.
They're like, where do you keep all the discs?
On top of the curtain rail.
So that's why libraries can be good.
Yeah.
Yeah. But unless I have an emotional connection to a book and I've really enjoyed it, I'd like to be able to hold it to pass it on to somebody. I don't really feel a need to own a physical copy.
Mm. What about from childhood? Do you have books that you read then that maybe still with your parents, or your childhood books are passed
along? I have books that I love from childhood that I love giving to kids.
Mm-hmm. What sorts of books are they that you share with your nieces? And
Yeah. I've just bought a copy for my partner's nieces. I've just bought a copy of The Very Hungry Caterpillar.
Oh, fantastic. Yep.
I know it's not Australian, but I just love it.
No, it's a fantastic book.
It's a fantastic book. And especially because they're not old enough to be fully immersed in language. They're very young. And also they don't speak English. So it's such a beautiful book to kind of introduce to people, because it's much more about the pictures and the text is very digestible.
Yes.
If you just want to learn a few. I didn't even mean it. I swear I didn't even mean it.
Genius.
Yeah, so I'm Very Hungry Caterpillar is a good one.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a similar book in that it's kind of about food and it's written for kids in Australia, that's part of the folklore there, called Possum Magic.
Okay.
Which is a beautiful thing. And I can't remember exactly why the possum becomes invisible, but the possum does. So there's a baby, a kid possum. I don't know what a baby possum's called. Let's call it a baby possum.
Uh-huh.
And somewhere along the line there's some sort of food that will bring baby possum back to being visible.
Visible, okay.
Right? And so they go through, him and his grandmother, actually, grandmother possum, and they go through and they try all of these kind of Australian dishes and none of them quite work until at the end when he eats a Vegemite sandwich and he comes back.
See, I can't hear that without thinking of that song.
Oh, yeah, I'm not going to sing it.
No.
But you're thinking of the great Australian national anthem,
yes.
Minute Works Down Under. Yeah.
But there you go.
So Possum Magic's a beautiful one. That's a local one. But we've got lots of great, children's books about, because we've got so many animals to work with.
Uh-huh.
They love to.
And your animals in themselves are a little interesting, should I say. So they, you know, the characters you can build around them.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah. Any other books you want to tell us about that you've have made a mark on you, or books you want to read that you just think, no, one day I need to get a copy of that? And
we've talked about travel and we've talked about food, and considering the recent events, I feel like I'd really love to mention the two books that were first written by Anthony Bourdain.
Mm.
Yeah. You know, they stuck with a lot of people. They resonated with a lot of people, Kitchen Confidential and A Cook's Tour. And I think they're still two of my favourites.
Yeah.
I much prefer his writing to watching him on screen.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's got a really great voice on the page. And so those two books stand out for me. And if I was standing in front of my bookshelf at home, I'd pull out a whole lot of them and kind of say, oh, that's a great deal. And they all bring back a lot of memories when you stand there and do look at them. But
those two stand out when you say
books that I read in the past that kind of hung with me.
Yeah,
such a great voice that a lot of us could relate to.
Yeah, he's very eloquent actually for a foodie, if you know what
for
I mean.
For a chef.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because normally
there.
Yeah. I think we better stop there before I start talking about chefs.
Okay.
But thank you very much. This has been Monique Chambers talking to Monique Bayer on Books, Beach and Beyond.
Thank you for joining me, Monique Chambers, on this week's Beach, Books and Beyond. I'd also like to thank Samuel Attard and Carmelo Brett for helping me to produce this programme. Join us again next week for Beach, Books and Beyond, here on Campus FM.